Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Media, the radio show. And we have a special guest tonight who's going to be joining us in a few minutes. But I wanted to just tell you how you can find us on the web and about our sponsors. We want to definitely mention Here Be Monsters. They give us the space to broadcast every week, this hour and a half on Friday nights. If you look them up on Blog Talk Radio, Here Be Monsters, there's also a wonderful stable of programming that happens throughout the week. We've got Spirit Therapy with Nicole. We have Consciousness Shift with Gwendolyn Barry. We have Up Late with Pinko and the Bear, and so much more going on. So check out Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm sure there's other shows there that you'd like to listen to. To find us on the web, you can find us at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. We're also tweeting at Wise Women Media. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group. Our current sponsors are Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo blog. Anytime that you would like to get in touch with me about upcoming guests, or you have suggestions for guests that could be on future shows, just send me an email at anitastewart@gmail.com. Our special guest tonight, she's going to be talking all about love, is Arlene Schindler. She is, her current offering is The Last Place Should Look, a wonderful, brilliant, might I say very sexy novel. She sent me a sample and I've been reading through it, and wow, it's definitely, as she says, a combination of bossy pants meets 50 Shades of Grey. Arlene originated the comedy review column for the New York Post, writing reviews and profiles of comedians that were appearing in New York City. In the past, she was a relationship expert, guest guru for America Online. Everybody remembers America Online, their program Love Online, and a writer-editor for Women Magazine and Playgirl, also writing for the Los Angeles Times, Daily Variety, and Creative Screenwriting. Arlene is a regular on the spoken word circuit in Los Angeles, telling tales of women's secrets and desires, a raucous romp through the hidden lives of today's mature women. And I'll tell you what, this is going to be a treat. So, of course, we welcome calls throughout the show, or feel free to join us in the chat room. You can refresh your screen if you don't see the chat. But the chat box is open, so you can drop us questions there or comments. The call-in number is 213-816-0357. Again, 213-816-0357. So I believe we have Arlene joining us now, so let me click her in. Hello, are you with us?
Yes, good evening, Anita.
I am so glad that we can do this show, and it was just so fitting to put the Beatles on. I noticed that in your writing, you happen to notice, or you happen to, like, create the scene, and there's usually a little bit about music in the scene, too, and
yeah.
I just wanted to tell our listeners that it's pretty incredible, but Sunday night, February 9th, is the 50-year anniversary of the Beatles' first television appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show back in 1964. So I don't know if you remember it, but I certainly do.
I was
so,
there.
Were you around then? Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes, I remember it very well.
Yeah,
I had a sore throat the following day from screaming.
My father was doing ran a radio station, owned a radio station, and was doing a promo while the Beatles were in New York. So it was, I want to hold your hand for 24 hours in the station.
Wow.
So it was really amazing times back then. But we have so much to talk about, and it looks like you have done so much in your career, but especially... You know, I find amazing not just the writing, but the ability to be able to communicate, too, about love. And tell us a little bit how the writing started, but how you kind of gravitated towards the love and relationship expertise that got you going more or less in this genre of writing.
Well, I had been single for a very long time. It felt like most of my lifetime. And right around that time, I was also a self-help writer. I was writing for women's magazines, and part of the role is to pitch and create story ideas of articles that you think the readers want to read. Well, So what I, the first thing I would do is think about what I would want to read. So if I was having challenges in my personal life, I would think about what did I want to know the outcome for. So I would pitch those articles, then I would get those assignments. And I remember in particular doing an article that the premise was, you've gone out with a man five times, and why after five dates, because people can understand one or two dates, but why after five dates he doesn't call back? So that was the premise. And part of what I needed to do was I interviewed men in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. I interviewed two men in each generational group. And it was very interesting outcomes that helped me move forward in my own dating life.
So what did they say, or what were some of the reasons that they gave for not doing the call back?
Well,
and for just basically I mean, I know that's probably happened to you. It's happened to me. You know, they're there, and then they're gone, and then there's no call, and then there's no contact, and you know, you just wonder, what did I do?
There was one guy who talked about how he went to a woman's apartment, and that she had 23 dolls on her bed, and that was a deal killer for him. And then there was somebody else who told a story about that they didn't get along with a woman's dolls, or somebody said that they actually met somebody else. So it's those kinds of scenarios, which in many cases are in some ways kind of extraneous rather than something somebody actually says or does.
So we women run around through the rest of our lives wondering, why didn't he call back? What did I do? So it's kind of like a self-introspection and self-blame. So
yeah.
What do we do about that?
Well, one of my friends, who is a very wise woman, she said to me once, in our 20s, women think about making their bodies the best they can be. And in their 30s, they think about making their mind the best they can be. And in their 40s, they think about how the mind-body connection works. And then in their 50s, they just don't care. They just kind of accept who they are and love who they are and just kind of roll with it.
Yeah.
That the 50s is the rebirth to go after everything you've wanted.
Yeah. You being in your 50s, do you think that that's true about women in their 50s?
In many ways, yes. I mean, I think that most of my friends who are in their 50s are vivacious and dynamic and very interesting and very provocative and very attractive women. I think that the perception in the outer world may not necessarily be the same. I believe that midlife women are becoming an endangered species in our culture.
Yes, I agree with that for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, we don't see them out in public places. We don't necessarily see them out in restaurants on a Saturday night. I mean, in movies, Meryl Streep can only do so much.
Right. She seems to be like the poster girl for the over 50 woman, doesn't she?
Yes. And, you know, and it's not that the other actresses aren't trying.
Right. How do you think that affects women generally when there's really very few role models and very few, you know, in our media, in our culture, in what we see coming out of Hollywood? How does that affect us?
Well, I think that it creates just a kind of a frustrating feeling. I mean, there's the whole thing of, what is it? They call it the cloak of midlife invisibility. But one of the things that I write about, especially in my book, and also I've recently, the past few months, I've been a frequent contributor for the Huffington Post. I write for HuffPost 50.
Oh, that's marvelous.
Thank you.
Good.
And, when nobody's looking, you can do anything you want to be. And women can be bolder and brasher and louder and more aggressive, you know, because the whole thing is if they're peeking and nobody's looking, then, you know, you can just be whoever you want to be.
Right.
And that there's some really good feelings involved with that.
There's no peer pressure. There's no, you don't have to worry about what you're doing or make excuses for what you do because you're just you. And there's nobody to tell you that you can't do this or can't do that. So
exactly.
That's all a big positive. So,
yeah.
And I find that very liberating and freeing, don't you?
Yes, I do. Midlife women have a self-sufficient ease. A lot like the women in Renaissance paintings. You know, if you think about the lush nude forms in the French countryside in those paintings,
right.
And that their bodies say, this is who I am. Take it or leave it.
Right. Right. I think it's amazing that we can't, it's almost like we can't go out and get a regular job, a lot of us, especially over 55, we're really shunned from the job marketplace, but yet we can create so much around us. It's almost like all of a sudden your skills are peaked in your 50s.
Yes.
And you can develop and hone those skills and create where you want to be and create the kind of work and life's path that you want to be on. And I find that pretty interesting. A couple of years ago, I wouldn't have thought that, being unemployed, but as I've had to get more creative as I've gotten a little older now, I'm finding that I like this. I like the way this is right now because I call the shots.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there may be some that disagree with me, but I find it liberating, freeing, and I would not want to go back to 30, I don't think.
Right.
Not
well,
now.
I agree. And also, women over 50 are the fastest growing demographic in America. And they're reshaping the age we live in. I mean, when we were 25, 55 looked ancient. And that the women who are in their 50s and their early 60s, many of these women, I remember for myself, going into the job market, there were many closed doors and closed minds. And that our generation is the ones that opened those doors and made things easier for younger generations. Without these generations, younger generations would have not had the opportunities to lean in.
Mm-hmm.
And we should count ourselves as being very valuable, but we should also be able to count on each other for support and encouragement and in some cases for job leads and to help people with opportunities.
I was going to ask that question, actually, and you kind of segued right into it, but how important in this over 50 experience do you consider support from other women? And what happens to women when they can't get that support?
Well, I think the support is very, very valuable, in some cases priceless. I'm actually going to, for my first time, a a boomer relationship group tomorrow, and it's going to be about eight or nine women who are going to be talking about the state of relationships at this time in their life. So I almost wish I could have done this last weekend and been able to report out to you. But I'm hoping that this will be very very enlightening, and I'm looking forward to that.
So tell us how the book, your latest offering, The Last Place Should Look, how did that whole project get birthed, as it were?
Well, it started on the weekends when I actually had a job doing marketing and public relations. I was writing it on the weekends. I was, at the time, it seemed as though a lot of my friends were busy and didn't really have the time to socialize with me. So rather than feel lonely about it, I created this story and was able to visit and engage with my friends in this book every weekend over a course of years.
Yeah, I'm finding as I'm reading through the sample you sent me, this is a very sexy book. It's kind of the thought that came to me as I was reading it was looking for love in all the wrong places, but yet the places weren't really wrong. It was the situations that you were in, like the first guy that opens up the book, Ack. Tell us a little bit about that character and how you developed him, because that's pretty funny. I mean, his whole character's funny, and his whole character was so typical of the selfish man.
I think that men have agendas, and then, or some men have agendas, and then they project those agendas on whoever they're with. So it's not really personal. It's not necessarily something they do with you or for you or to you that's about you. You just happen to be the live body there at the moment. And I think that men have expectations, and I also think that as we get older, that, you know, many people don't necessarily see themselves getting older or changing or doing things differently until they're in the company of one of their peers. And, you know, it's like a man can be out with a woman who he finds attractive and sexy, and then later on in the evening it may occur to him that he's out trying to seduce someone's grandmother, and that may make him feel old, and then suddenly, because he feels old, she is wrong for him. And she didn't have anything to do with it.
It was his perception of the whole
exactly.
thing. Exactly. Wow. So, in real life, did you meet somebody like Ack, or is he kind of a conglomeration of characters?
No, he was a singular non-sensation.
Oh, my.
Yes.
And I just thought that you opened up the book with him, and it was just a humorous, you know, that part of it was so humorous, but that part of it was so typical because, you know, most women that have been actively dating have encountered an Ack, you know, probably several times in their life. So it was something that was very familiar, the personality type and everything. But, boy, it was kind of like, okay, the same situation at the end. Well, why doesn't he call? You know, why did he ask me to leave, and why am I leaving, and, you know, why didn't he call? So that all was very interesting and familiar. So when you wrote this book, you wrote this over the course of time. What age, from when to when, were you writing it?
Well, the book is about the sex lives of women 45 to 60. So it's a novel, and those are the ages of the characters. I started writing the book when I was about 48 and a half, thinking about 50. And I ended up finishing the book when I was in my mid-50s.
Oh, wow. So, it took quite a little bit of time to do the
Yes,
book
it
then.
Did. Well, it was weekends while I had a job. So, yes. A little bit at a time. Yeah. But,
go ahead.
No, you go.
I know you've been a comedy writer. How much of it did you approach with comedy? It looks like, you know, there's some really serious emotional parts of what I read that were really tugging on the heartstrings. And then there were other, you know, whole areas where it, you know, the situations were just hilariously funny. So it was kind of like it was so mixed up. It really was a pleasure to read. I wasn't able to read the whole sample, but I read a good deal of it, and I want to keep going. I want to buy the book. So.
Okay, great.
So it's good, and I can definitely say that. So you have done comedy writing before, so would you say that you threw the comedy bits in, or were they actual true experiences?
Well, I kind of think in comedy, and I live in comedy, so whatever parts are funny, it kind of was organic and really grew out of the experiences. In real life, there's a chapter in the book where she goes to meet a blind date who was set up by friends, and when she gets there to her date's sister's house, she finds out that her date died earlier in the week, but they heard such good things about her that the entire family wanted to have Sunday brunch with her. Well, that experience has actually happened to me twice in life.
That's amazing. That's just amazing. And we were talking a little bit about that in the pre-interview, and you did sit and have brunch with the family.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And I really liked the family. So then when the afternoon ends, you go through a whole other kind of experience, which is so different than when you go on a date and you know that it's not working, or you know at the end that the other person did not like you, usually the signal is they shake your hand and they say, it was nice meeting you. And that's your cue to step away and get on with the rest of your life. But here was a situation where I really liked the family. And I, you know, when I left the family and the whole family said, it was nice meeting you, you know, then I got back in my car and I was most distressed, in some ways more distressed than usual when a date does not go well, because I thought of what could have been, you know, that this family might have been a part of my life if I did not have, you know, the dead date experience.
Right. I wanted people to know that are listening, you can look up Arlene's website at arleneschindler.com. That's arleneschindler.com. She has a blog, links to some of her articles, and you do have an upcoming book as well.
Book is actually still being written, so I don't have a... I don't have a date for that, but what I would like to mention is for the next 4 days, this book is available on sale on Amazon for 99 cents, and that it's an excellent gift to give your single friend who's going to be alone for Valentine's Day, or if you're going to be alone for Valentine's Day, it would be a wonderful idea to have some laughs with all of the characters in this book.
I'm definitely going to be buying it as soon as we get finished so I can read it on Kindle. And there's a blog. And also, tell us a little bit about your spoken word, because for those of you that are looking on the website, Arlene has some sound clips. She has a video. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing with that, too.
Well, in New York and Los Angeles, there's a trend towards storytelling. The most famous of that is something called The Moth, which Malcolm Gladwell is very active in. And it's
a series.
Oh,
right, the writer, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm, yes.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing,
and it's a series of events where people tell stories of experiences and things, in some cases not unlike some of the things in this book. The parts of this book that were kind of close to life, I have told those stories in front of rooms full of people or in various clubs. In some ways, it's sort of an offshoot from stand-up comedy. So most of my stories are usually pretty humorous, and I'm actually doing a storytelling event this coming Sunday. For anyone who's in Los Angeles, I'm going to be this Sunday. There's going to be an evening of Valentine's and love-related stories at Flapper's Comedy Club in Burbank, in Los Angeles.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for getting that out there. So, spoken word is really storytelling, poetry telling. Is there any other way you can describe it for people who might not know?
It's more storytelling and more monologues, if you will.
Uh-huh. So it might not necessarily be funny, but it's definitely emotional. Am I right?
Yes, it is. And there's a lot of different venues where this is happening. In Los Angeles, there's probably about 20 or 30 places around town that people can go to. And some nights it's all different kinds of stories. There are certain places where there's a theme for the evening, so whatever story you're going to be telling has to be on that theme.
Uh-huh. Right.
You know, yeah. So and it's been pretty popular.
You also worked for AOL for Love Online. Tell us what that was like and what kind of questions you got when you were doing
well,
that.
Well, that was really a very brief stint, and that was right around the time that I did self-help. And it was really very similar to the kinds of letters that people used to write to women's magazines. You know,
okay.
questions about relationships or things like even, I think she's at Elle Magazine, E. Jean Carroll, or even, you know, things, you know, that Dear Abby used to do, just that it was a matter of things that are, you know, relationship-centric. You know, like somebody would write in, I'm dating a man and our relationship is really great, but whenever we go into the bedroom, he wants me to wear wigs. How should I feel?
Yeah, like really freaked out things, huh?
You know, but somebody has an issue and they, you know, want somebody else's point of view. They want some advice.
Right.
So those were the kinds of things that I would do. And I think at the time it was actually at AOL, I believe it was a chat line forum kind of thing where people would actually type in questions that would come to me, and then I would, you know, in 30 seconds type the answers back. And it would be, I think it was like an hour a week, and it was really quite exhausting to think and problem solve and type in, you know, so speedily.
Right, right. And you also you were a writer and an editor for Women Magazine and Woman Magazine and Playgirl.
Yes.
Tell
yes.
us a little bit about that. I used to read Playgirl in my younger years, of course. And, of course, nowadays I wouldn't even think of picking the magazine up. I just, it's not something I'm interested in anymore. But Woman Magazine, what did you have? Did you have columns, or were you just strictly the writer editor?
Well, no, I was not the editor in chief. I was I had started there as a freelancer writing assignments, and then later on, I was an editor. I was overseeing some of the work of some of the other writers and helping generate story ideas, or as I describe it, I was churning out advice that got battered women out of trailer parks, and I encouraged wrinkled soccer moms to moisturize. But at the end of the day, I couldn't unravel my own mess. And I remember when I was there, there were certain editors that dealt with certain sections or certain areas of specialty. And I remember in particular, there was somebody who just did hair and makeup. She was the hair and makeup editor.
Oh,
and,
my.
Wait, but she had the worst hair.
And, so she was writing about it, but she was giving advice about it, but she had hair, bad hair.
Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
funny.
And whoever, what was it, one of the style people was like, she, you know, we would sit behind her back. Does she have mirrors or indoor lighting in her home where she gets dressed? And it just seemed
scary.
As though it seems at the time that I was writing advice columns, I had probably the worst dating relationships, and I've now been able to use a lot of that as material for this book and for other things I've been writing.
All right. Well, I have to ask this question, Arlene. Do you plan on doing a screenplay for this movie?
Well, I would love for there to be a screenplay. I mean, it's very visual. And I've had some interest in it from a movie producer or two, but I'm actually hoping, for something a little bit more substantial. And I think if nothing else, it would give at least 6 to 15 wonderful actresses who are over 45 great opportunities.
Oh, yeah, definitely. As I was reading the pages of the sample that you gave me, I really liked the funny thing about ACK, but the funnier thing was the intervention. And
yes.
I thought, that's an interesting scene. That could actually provide parts for quite a few women.
Yes.
But it was an interesting, it was just an interesting dynamic of several women, trying to help you through your hard times. And I liked that. In my mind's eye, I could see that as a movie. It was a very visual scene. I thought, wow, this could carry over to film very easily. So I really liked that idea. So I figured, I'll ask about it. Now, what this other question I wanted to ask you was, you are a New Yorker, but now you're in California.
Yes.
How did you make that move? What was the catalyst for switching coasts?
Well, I was briefly writing for television, so I was brought out to the West Coast by a television network to develop a project, and as soon as I unpacked, the show died, and I stayed.
Oh, wow. So it was meant to be. So how long have you been on the West Coast now?
I guess about 22 years, although according to many people, I have not lost my New York accent.
No, you haven't. You still have it.
Yeah.
I can tell. But is there anything that would ever make you go back to New York?
No.
So that would definitely not ever be a permanent home.
It's too cold and too expensive.
Yeah, yeah. And California, I remember California back in our young days, everybody said, oh, you got to make the trip. You got to hitchhike out to California, and college is free. I remember that. Do you remember that?
Oh. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no. I was going to make the trip myself, you know, hitchhike out there and then go to college for free. And, of course, it's not free anymore, but that was the closest I ever got to going to the West. I'm here in Florida. But, sometimes we function better in a different place.
Yes.
Sometimes we are not meant to be in the place that we're in. Sometimes our creativity never comes out, and we're stifled in those places.
Yeah.
If this is where you are and you've been able to be creative and produce so much from your creativity, then obviously it's the place where you're supposed to be.
Yeah,
so
what's
for the future for Arlene? What are you going to be doing? What's your next projects?
Well, I'm finishing up this other book, and then I'm working on another book, which is finishing up a memoir, and there's a little bit about my memoir on my website. But shortly after that, I'm going to be working on some short stories, which have to do with bad dates and disastrous relationships. And that book is actually called Intimate Disasters and Other Selected Shorts.
Oh, that sounds really good.
So
I was going to ask you also, have you thought about doing like installments in magazines? Or have you done that already, like a continuing?
No, I have not done that, but the Intimate Disasters pieces are actually going to be short pieces. I think those may actually be three smaller books that will hopefully come out like 90 days apart from each other, and that will be kind of bite-sized, smutty, funny stories.
Yeah.
And that are intimate disasters, because I seem to step into them with frequency, and if I can share them as stories, then the pain and angst was all worthwhile.
Now we're getting towards the end of your time.
Yes.
We've got like a couple minutes to go. Do you have any closing comments for our listeners? Do you want to tell them how to find you definitely make a plug for the book again? And I'm going to be heading right over to Amazon to make my purchase. So.
Great. Yes. To learn more about me, go to arleneschindler.com. I'm also on Goodreads. You can find me on Amazon. The Kindle is now on sale for 99 cents. The paperback is also available there, and it's a fun, smutty beach read.
And have you ever thought about being a consultant, another one who would have a column that would provide expert advice to people that, you know, are lost in love or lovelorn or looking for that one love?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Yeah, because I think the over 50 crowd's going to need it. There's going to be a bunch of us baby boomers are maturing, and we're going to be the largest demographic thing up. So there's a real need for that, and there's a lot of lonely people out there.
Well,
so I think
hopefully I will have
you,
a lot
anyway.
To offer them for, guidance and consolation and humor, because also the stories that I tell are so much more outrageous and disastrous than things other people experience. And I've heard from my readers that they find great consolation in that whatever they've experienced was so much less traumatic than things that were in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're down to 45 minutes, and I know you said you had to go, but
yes.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you very much, Anita. This was fun.
Yeah, and people, I always tell people it's just a conversation. We're just having a conversation. And everybody, you can get in touch with Arlene Schindler at arleneschindler.com and direct any questions to her under the contact portion of that website. And I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week. And I'm going to close with a wonderful song that you're probably going to love, Arlene. It's by Tedeschi Trucks Band, and the song is called Love Has Something Else to Say. So good night, everyone, till next week.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Can I learn how to give? Can I throw?